Be 6'5" in his prime. That was awesome, you know. And I thought, well, you know, I could really, if the Lord would so bless me, I could make a great contribution to our basketball team if I were 6'5". But as you know, I never did get that high. I was always the little brother of my big brother, even though he's gotten a little bit shorter. I don't think my concern was unique, but I think a lot of boys want to be tall. They want to be, for various reasons. And I don't know about women. I know one of the concerns that women have is that they'll be able to find a guy taller than them. So they like to be not quite as tall, I guess. But here we have a king, a young man that's chosen because he's tall. It seems, to our casual reading, he's chosen just because he's tall and good looking. But before you discount that too much, remember that Israel was rebuked by their prophet, by Samuel, because they were looking on the outward appearance. They wanted to be like the other nations. And that was one thing that stuck in God's throat, because that was not his intent, that they be like the other nations, but that they be a light to the nations. By their desire, they were insistent, and they pushed it through. And so Samuel, even though he's a dear old man, the more I study him, the more I like him. And he had that great victory in chapter 7. Nevertheless, they discarded him, and they're looking for a king. So here, chapter 9, we move from theocracy, some say, into monarchy, having a king or a monarch, which was their idea, but also God wove it in with his plan for a king to come. We have a democracy in America, which we think is pretty great, and I know a lot of foreign policy has been, you know, toward establishing democracies in other countries. They're better than tyrannies, I guess. They're only as good as the people, though, right? Democracy means rule of the demos, or the people, and a democracy, when the people are not very spiritual, can be a pretty bad place as well. So it's not that outward thing, right? It's who's the king in your heart. Well, this part, this story is a long one. I'm only going to read the first half, chapter 9, which will probably seem plenty long to you. But chapter 10 is the second part of the story, and I'll just kind of sum that up a little bit. When we get down to that point, bear in mind that as we do this, that the thrust is in the writer's mind, I think, to show us, well, here's the one you wanted, you know, here's the outward appearance, but the main thing is the glorious king that God has for us to come in Christ. So, verse 1 starts the same way as chapter 1:1. There was a man. NIV says there was a Benjamite, man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, son of Zeror, son of Bechorath, the son of Aphiah of Benjamin. He had a son named Saul, an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites, a head taller than any of the others. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost. And Kish said to his son Saul, "Take one of the servants with you and go and look for the donkeys." So he passed through the hill country of Ephraim, through the area around Shalisha. But they did not find them. They went on into the district of Sha'alim, but the donkeys were not there. Then he passed through the territory of Benjamin, but he didn't find them. Then, when they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant who was with him, "Come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us." But the servant replied, "Look, in this town there is a man of God. He is highly respected, and everything he says comes true." Remember earlier, God said he wasn't going to let any of Samuel's words fall to the ground. Now the servant says, "Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take." Saul said to his servant, "If we go, What can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take to the man of God. What shall we? What do we have? Ironic for a rich man's kid. Verse 8, the servant answered him, look, I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God so that he will tell us what way to take. Formerly in Israel, if a man went to inquire of God, he would say, come, let us go to the seer, because the prophet of today used to be called a seer. Good, Saul said to his servant, come, let's go. So they set out for the town where the man of God was. And as they were going up the hill to the town, they met some girls coming out to draw water. And they asked them, is the seer here? He is, they answered. He is ahead of you. Hurry now. He has just come to our town today. For the people have a sacrifice at the high place. And as soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. The people will not begin eating until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Go up now. You should find him about this time. They went up to the town, and as they were entering it, there was Samuel coming toward them on his way up to the high place. Now, the day before Samuel came, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel. About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him leader over my people Israel. He will deliver my people from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked upon my people, for their cry has reached me. When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, this is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people. Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked him, would you please tell me where the seer's house is? I am the seer, Samuel replied. Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you are to eat with me, and in the morning I will let you go and will tell you all that is in your heart. That's quite something. Verse 20, as for the donkeys you lost 3 days ago, don't worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and all your father's family? Saul answered, but am I not a Benjamite from the smallest tribe of Israel, and is not my clan the least of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin? Why do you say such a thing to me? And then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and seated them at the head of those who were invited, about 30 in number. And Samuel said to the cook, bring the piece of meat I gave you, the one I told you to lay aside. So you see the sacrifice has taken place. There's no mention of that here in the narrative. So the cook took up the leg that was on it and set it in front of Saul. Samuel said, here is what has been kept for you. Eat, because it was set aside for you on this occasion. From the time I said, I have invited guests. And Saul dined with Samuel that day, and after that, after they came down from the high place to the town, Samuel talked with Saul on the roof of his house. So hospitality, he invited him in. Verse 26, they arose about daybreak, and Samuel said to Saul on the roof, get ready, and I will send you on your way. When Saul got ready, he and Samuel went outside together, and as they were going down to the edge of the town, Samuel said to Saul, tell the servant to go on ahead of us. And the servant did so. But you stay here a while so that I may give you a message from God. I'm going to stop with the end of chapter 9 there. So Saul is introduced to us now. I wanted to just lift out a couple of parallels for you, maybe help you get more comfortable in this part of 1 Samuel. The one is to notice that Samuel himself, you know, came on the scene when Eli had a great need. Eli was old, and Samuel became a great helper to him, and kind of like an adopted son, although not a formal adoption. Samuel still had his mother, Hannah, looking out for him, but they had that unique relationship of father-son, almost, you might say. Coach and mentee, something like that. Kind of interesting that way. And then here comes Saul on the scene, and Saul comes in Samuel's old age, and Saul is going to be kind of like an adopted son to Samuel. Saul still has Kish and his mom back there at home. But in the chapters to come, you'll see Samuel trying to coach Saul. Saul's way more difficult than Samuel was, though. He doesn't want to be a helper. He's like the kid that doesn't want to get along. But he nevertheless comes into that kind of a relationship. And their names are similar in the Hebrew. Samuel and Saul almost sounds a little bit alike in the English and kind of means something similar, like heard, you know, or heard. Samuel heard of God, and Saul just, I hear. But other than that, there's a lot of contrasts in their character that are kind of laid out like this for us. And even this, I could say, in Samuel, we see a guy that would be a wonderful king and was blessed by God and led by the word of God and was victorious by the power of God. You remember that from chapter 7 when he had the great victory over the Philistines and set up that place that he called Ebenezer. You remember all that? God fought that battle with thunder. It's an amazing story. Right after that, the old man was discarded by the elders of Israel. Look here, you're old, and we don't want your sons either. We want a king. So, but Samuel himself, for that dear man, was he would have been a great king. Saul, on the other hand, is kind of useless. And that contrast will come out as you go through the chapters that we intend to take up in future weeks, if the Lord tarries, and we're still here, still studying the same passage. So out of chapter 9, what do I want to do out of chapter 9? I want to say, just point out a couple of ordinary things, some odd things, and some ordained things. That's the outline for you this morning. And we'll start with the ordinary things. And the ordinary things, of course, are laid out for us in the life of the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin had been a disgrace to the nation. That's talked about in Judges. I've already read from that and mentioned that to you in previous weeks. It was in Benjamin that this terrible crime was committed against his concubine. She didn't punish the wrongdoers, and so Israel, it was a horrible, gory scene at the end of the book of Judges. And Benjamin, you know, the youngest of Rachel, was where it all happened. Rachel died giving birth to Benjamin, and this is kind of how he repaid her honor, by being just a disgrace. But the ordinary thing about that is that quite often happens, but that by God's grace, the people recovered and they went to work in ordinary ways. They did their sheep herding and their tending of the grapes and all of the things that they did in that area. And as happens in every community that I've ever lived in, there's one or two guys that rise to the top and they become the more wealthy members of the community, the more successful. And I could talk, since I'm getting older, I could tell stories from Jenison and from New York and from Sioux Falls and from Grafskep about who were the handful of guys that rose to the top and had the most prominence and power. So that's ordinary. You might not like it, but that ordinarily happens. And Kish is very ordinary in that respect. He did well, nothing unusual about that. He's probably a good businessman, probably a hard worker. The other ordinary thing is that, and this is very ordinary, which you know if you have animals, you would know this, that they get away once in a while. So one ordinary morning, the donkeys were found to be missing. So what, you think? In those days, donkeys were valuable. And they had a lot to do, and to lose three of them was pretty bad. Kind of like finding out that somebody stole your new pickup truck. Not good. So Kish comes in the kitchen in the morning, and there's this big old hunk of a guy, Saul, eating his porridge with raisins and cinnamon and sugar and all of that. And he says, "Hey, the donkeys are gone. Go find the donkeys." And Saul goes out, and he doesn't find them. All of that's very ordinary. It's ordinary that he took a servant to their rich family. They had servants. And those are just some ordinary things in an ordinary life. And here's another thing, the last ordinary thing, and kind of the saddest, is that we find out as we read this chapter that Saul lived most of his life in that area near Gibeah and never heard of Samuel. Samuel was a great man, great spiritual leader, and he had a circuit that he moved in. And yet, when they get near his neighborhood, the servant knows that there's a great seer here, but Saul doesn't know anything about it. It'd be kind of like growing up in the United States in this last century especially and never having heard of Billy Graham. Billy Graham, never heard of him. Who is that? Right? I mean, how could you say that? You've got to be out of touch in a serious way. But I'm sorry to say that that's not that unusual. A lot of people, good-looking people, have really no interest in spiritual things. You know that. Saul's one of them, just an ordinary bloke. When I had Greek at Calvin College, we studied with Professor Otten. Otten was an interesting fellow, very reverent in his demeanor, you know, and we were reading through Matthew. That was what he wanted to do. And he apologized. He said, "You know, I'm not really sure we should use Holy Scripture for classroom work like this." But anyway, we had to learn it somehow. So he was leading us through. And the interesting thing to me was, I think after the first day, one of the students across the table from me had a question. He said, "Who is Matthew? I never heard of Matthew." And I was like, "Really? You never heard of Matthew? Have you ever heard of, what are you doing in Greek class? You never heard of Matthew?" I talked to him a little bit afterwards. He was a secular guy. Came to Calvin because it was a nice place and got a good package, and he wanted to be multilingual, so he took this Greek class. That is just a rabbit trail. I'm just saying, there's a lot of people like Saul, and it's a very ordinary kind of thing to find. So if you meet somebody like that, even if they're good looking, doesn't mean that they're spiritual. That's the ordinary secular mind that we see. And it has this, I think, benefit for us as people that live now, which is to remove from us, relieve us of the misconception that celebrities ought to be leaders. I mean, why is it that we think that movie stars are smart? I don't get that. I watched, I'm going to throw out a few names that maybe you know, maybe you don't. If you don't, that probably speaks well of you. But these are kind of famous people in our culture. Matt Damon, you know Matt Damon, the actor? Harvard invited him to be a commencement speaker a few years ago. I listened to part of the speech, and the part I listened to, he said, "I've never been through college, never got a degree." And he went on and said, "So I mean, not that he doesn't have anything to say, but just because he's a movie star doesn't make him high caliber, right?" You get that? Here's another name, Taylor Swift. You know Taylor Swift? She has a lot of fans. Swifties, they call them. I like her music. She's cute, right? And bouncy and all of that. And one of her first songs was called "Why'd You Have to Be So Mean?" You know, but do you think Taylor knows anything? They all think they should have a mic. She said that she's pro-choice. You know, she's in favor of abortion on demand. I think, well, you idiot. You know, how could you sing "You're So Mean" and then say that? That's just a couple. I mean, there's a lot of other celebrities that we could mention that people think just because they're a celebrity. Maybe you can go back in your memory to the Johnny Carson days when he used to interview guests and think of some of the movie stars that came on there, and you thought after you watched it, what morons those guys are. So at the very least, this glimpse of Saul the ordinary man should disabuse us of that misconception that just because somebody's good-looking and a good actor or actress does not mean they're gifted or at all spiritual or wise. So there's something ordinary. How about a few things that fall under the category of odd? What are some odd things about this chapter? I picked out a couple. You might have seen others. One of the odd things pops out in verses 6 through 10, and it's the servant. Interesting fellow. He comes along, he's never named, but he seems to really get what is needing to happen, that Saul needs to talk to Samuel. And as I've thought about this servant, I wondered if he's a believer, because he very gently, you know, kind of like your young man there, he very gently approaches the whole situation. There's a seer over here. Maybe he could help us find the donkeys. I don't have any money. We can't do that. Yeah, I've got a little silver here. Isn't that odd, though, right? That the servant takes the lead and that the servant of this rich guy's kid has the money and that the servant prevails. You've been at all familiar with the Lord of the Rings, you know that the unlikely people in that story are the little hobbits, right, that lead the way. That's what this guy does. He leads the way, and I'm just saying, that's odd, isn't it? He's not the main character, but he plays a key role. There aren't really any minor characters in God's story. Second odd thing, these girls. So they're on their way to try to find the seer. It's an interesting situation. And on the way, they meet a group of girls coming down to the well. So if you've been reading your Bible for a long time, lights go on, you think, oh, here's a meeting at a well. Lots of things happen at wells, right? Think about Moses. Who did he meet at a well? Think about Jesus. Who did he meet at a well? Anyway, here's this group of girls coming down. Nothing unusual in that. But what's odd is that they're all excited about the old man Samuel. Samuel's come to town, and he's going to have a feast today. That's what excites them. That's what interests them. Not this big hunk, handsome, tall, good-looking, rich kid's son, you know, rich man's kid. That, I think, is odd. But good, they point him to Samuel. Then they have another odd thing. Samuel knows who Saul is before Saul knows who Samuel is. But the interesting thing is that God talked to Samuel, whispered in his ear the day before, and he said, this time tomorrow, you will meet the man. There it is, verse 16. About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Appoint him leader over my people, Israel. Now, I think that's odd. Samuel was really in tune with the Lord. He had such a personal walk, and we've seen that before. And here it is. They're almost pictured as friends, you know, getting together. I just saw the Lord the other day at Trestle Stop, and he told me this. He told me to expect you. I think that's odd. I think it's beautiful. I think it's odd because God knew that those guys were on their way. And in fact, you might say God didn't know just the day before. God knew 3 days before, if not more, right? What do you think made those donkeys decide to leave at that time? Could be that God put a thought in their little tiny brains. God is the Lord of the beasts. We've seen that before in 1 Samuel. And 3 days before is not that long. God knew all of that. God knew all of that back in chapter 7, chapter 6, and right after Samuel was relieved from his command. I guess what I'm saying is the beautiful thing here is that even though all this hubbub is going on the lower level of the story, God is still the king. You know, complain all you want. He's still on the throne and he's still directing things. And that is a doctrine that we call divine providence. I want to read this to you because it's long and it's beautiful. And this is Lord's Day 10. Providence is the almighty and ever-present power of God by which he upholds, as with his hand, heaven and earth and all creatures, and so rules them that leaf and blade, rain and drought, fruitful and lean years, food and drink, health and sickness, prosperity and poverty. All things, in fact, come to us, not by chance, but by his fatherly hand. That's what believers say. So it may be odd to the world, not to us. We expected God to be active in this story, and here he is. So there's a few odd things. One of them also I pointed out to you when we were reading at verse 20. Verse 19 right at the end, where Samuel says to Saul, come to me, and in the morning I will let you go and tell you all that is in your heart. So Saul never mentioned what was in his heart. Actually, Saul didn't even know what was in his heart. Another way to read this verse is, I will reveal to you yourself. Odd? You meet somebody for the first time, you don't even recognize them, they know you, and then they say, I'm going to tell you who you are. Tomorrow morning I will reveal yourself to you. Those are some odd things. So Samuel's got this big lug to work with. But we also see something ordained. This is the last thing. And it's all by his gracious ordaining, like the old psalm said, hast thou not seen? All thy desires have been granted by what he ordaineth. So think about God's ordaining care here. That's a good-looking guy. He seems to be pretty friendly. He wants to get along. But there's something ominous about him. And so it's good to know that God's grace is ruling even over Saul.